I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 250. Can you believe it?
Oh, my word. A quarter of a millennium.
Quarter of a millennium. You're right. And obviously, we're starting the week 3 February 2019.
Talk Central is brought to you by techcentral.co.za. You can WhatsApp the show 071-999-1111.
On Talk Central this week, the Vodacom versus Makate soap opera.
Oh, what a soap opera it's turning out to be. Also on the show, Apple flexes its muscles with Facebook and Google. Spotify is reportedly buying a podcasting company. And hacker groups may have stolen $1 billion in cryptocurrency.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. It's Sunday afternoon. We're live streaming at live.techcentral.co.za. And it's time to talk everything tech.
Welcome to the show, episode 250. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan? Wow, I can't believe it.
Quite a milestone, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a big one. We should have been toting some beers instead of drinking coffee.
And I'm drinking sparkling water. What's wrong with us? Bad planning.
Sign of the times.
Really bad planning. But we're starting the live show slightly late today. My fault. I also have a bone to pick with a certain Mr. Joe Rogan. I'm sure you know who he is, Rechat.
Very
big US podcaster, famous for having Elon Musk smoking weed on his show a couple of months ago. I went for a trail run this morning, and I was out at Kingscliff, and I was thoroughly enjoying an interview he did in his latest show with Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very interesting discussion. So interesting, in fact, that I wasn't really paying attention to where I was running. And over a particularly rocky section at Kingscliff, I was so intently listening to Joe Rogan and Jack Dorsey talking about Facebook, of all things, that I wasn't paying attention, tripped over a rock, and had a very spectacular fall, tore up with my leg and my arm and put a rock in my hand. It was all very unpleasant.
Are you all right, though? Can you walk?
Well, I'm all savlond and plastered up now, so I'm hobbling around. If anyone tells you trail running isn't dangerous, they're lying to you. Listening to some fascinating podcasts while trail running may not be the best.
Was this a fun run or actual race?
No, it was just a fun run. I was doing a solo run by myself, 15K loop out at Kingscliff, which is near Krugersdorp. Amazing place, by the way, for anyone who listens to the show who is interested in mountain biking and trail running. There's hardly ever anyone there. It's the most amazing place.
Really?
It's kind of on the way out to the Cradle, just not far past Cradlestone Mall on the left-hand side. And it looks very nondescript when you park your car on the side of the road there. There's a guy there who sits there and looks after your car. And then you run in, and it takes about 5Ks before you get into Kingscliff itself. But once you're out there, it's so beautiful. Waterfalls, rivers,
wow.
And it's looking particularly spectacular at the moment after all the good rains we've had here in Gauteng. But if you're into trail running or mountain biking, it may be a bit too rocky for mountain bikers. I think you might end up with a few punctures if you try and mountain bike some of the sections. But it's fantastic for trail running. Really tough, lots of elevation gain, lots of single track. And as I can testify, you have to look where you're going.
Not Joe Rogan podcast approved.
No. So damn you, Joe Rogan. Your podcast was too interesting.
Well, at least it provided some light-hearted fun for the podcast.
Indeed.
Did you have a GoPro on you or anything?
No, sadly not. It would have made quite spectacular footage, actually.
That's the kind of thing that goes viral, Duncan. You should
exactly. Yeah, well, I don't know about face planting, but maybe if a giraffe leapt out off on the path in front of me and knocked me over or something.
Any face planting video will do well, I promise you.
But face planting, I'm afraid, is part of trail running, so everyone does it from time to time, but it's never, never pleasant, especially when you're landing on rocks. But I didn't lose an eye, and I don't think I've cracked any bones, so I live to continue with my stupidity for another day.
Yeah, as long as your fingers are fine to type, right?
Indeed. Indeed. So, episode 250. Wow, this is quite a milestone. Mm. We should have done this one in person, actually, thinking about it.
Yeah, we should have, but it happened quite quickly, I think.
Yeah, kind of snuck in at the beginning of the year. We're definitely going to have to do something for episode 300, which I think we'll get to around this time next year, early January probably, if we do one every week, which we seem to do. So, episode 250. Let's get cracking on it. Before we get into the news, though, let's do our quiz.
The first question: how much did Vodacom offer Nkosana Makate, according to his former litigation funder?
MTN this week chopped out of bundle ad hoc data prices to what per megabyte?
Third question: which state-owned company failed to pay its employees on time this week, blaming a bank glitch for the problem?
And allegations of misconduct at Eskom, which emerged this week and which were later refuted, caused the shares of which JSE-listed technology company to tumble?
And the final question: Apple this week said it would cut the price of iPhones in some markets outside of the US. Why did it say it was doing this?
And that's our quiz. We'll get to the answers at the end of the show, as always. But let's dive in. And there was one story that dominated headlines this week, and that's the Vodacom versus Nkosana Makate matter. This is the chap who the court founded invented the Please Call Me service for Vodacom, although there's a lot of people who dispute that, amongst them Mr. Ari Khan, who says he invented it for MTN and, in fact, patented it before Vodacom could. So lots of angles to the story, but there was a protest by something called an organization called the Please Call Me Movement, which happened at Vodacom's head office this week, and I went along to that. I think it was on Thursday, if I recall correctly. So I went along and I phoned Vodacom beforehand and got permission to go onto the campus. The campus was closed, but I arrived there. Burly security officer waved me through a back entrance, a staff entrance, got onto the campus, and I've never seen Vodacom so quiet. It was like a ghost town. It was really bizarre on a weekday. There were a few cars here and there, but very few employees to be seen. Most of the parking, you find difficult to find parking at Vodacom World. All that parking was empty. There was no one around.
Ghost town.
Everyone had stayed at home. Employees encouraged to stay away because they were expecting trouble. As it turns out, a group of, I would estimate, no more than 120 people were gathered at the main gate at Vodacom. They were met there, or they were facing a riot, the riot police, Gauteng Public Order Policing, I think they're called. These guys were in helmets with heavy-duty automatic rifles. they were ready for any sort of
war zone.
So apparently there were two buses that came in. I got there after the buses dropped them off. There was a few people arrived by car as well. All very peaceful. A couple of placards, people holding up, quite clearly well-organized placards saying, "Pay Makate 70 billion rand." Another one saying Vodacom is lying to investors in the JSE. One was calling Vodacom racist. And quite a few people, when I was there, I was doing an interview on ENCA, live crossing to ENCA. And while we were doing it, to my left, just under a tree and literally meters from all these riot police, were a group of protesters smoking weed. And the smell was drifting across the crowds, and
was a protest that boring?
you know, marijuana is basically legal now when protesters can light up in front of riot police.
That's funny.
It's hilarious, but very peaceful. And by the time I left, they seemed to be, there's a little bit of toying going on and that sort of thing. A couple of people in ANC t-shirts, a couple of people in SACP t-shirts. A couple of people in clearly printed Pay Makate t-shirts, but very peaceful and not much going on there. So I think Vodacom could probably have got away with just opening its office and just closing its main gate and letting the staff continue working. It must have had a big impact on their productivity, even in this day and age of remote working and that sort of thing. And I'm sure Vodacom's employees are quite good at remote working, but still, it must have had an impact on productivity.
But I'm quite surprised it's bow down like this. It just seems like, I don't know why it's seemingly just kind of given in to some of these things, like just let them have the upper hand. I don't know if it's a move on their part.
On whose part?
On Vodacom's part. I mean, they should have just had offices open. I mean, surely you can't let protesters intimidate you that much to close. Because, like you said, it must have cost a few rand to keep to have those offices closed. You know, the repercussions of that.
I suppose it is their responsibility to keep their staff safe. And we have had incidents with the EFF trashing Vodacom stores a few months ago, and some people getting assaulted in some of those stores. I think there was one in Limpopo in particular where there was some violence. So I'm sure that was fresh in the mind of the Vodacom management team, and they didn't want a repeat of any violent situations at their head office.
Sure, sure.
So maybe it was, you know, maybe they did go a bit overboard in terms of their telling all staff to stay away, but at the same time, there is sort of a precedence for this, and they you know, you don't want to put your employees in harm's way. At the end of the day, the protest was very small, bit of a damp squib, I'd say. But the background to all of this is, of course, you know, without rehashing everything, it's a very long story, but the background to this is that, you know, Makate said he came up with this please call me idea, which is this basically send a message and someone calls you back. About 18 years ago, he then demanded compensation for it. Vodacom said no, went through the court system, all the way to the Constitutional Court. I think the lower courts all found that he didn't deserve compensation. But the Constitutional Court, to the surprise of some, I think, found that he had invented the Please Call Me service and that he deserved compensation. And they then said that both parties, Vodacom and Makate, needed to enter into good faith negotiations to resolve the issue and come up with a reasonable compensation. Failing which, there would be a deadlock breaking mechanism where the CEO of Vodacom would be the deadlock breaker, which is, I think, surprised some people as well. He's not necessarily independent, and certainly not independent. So that's Shamil Jasub currently. So he was given the task of being the deadlock breaker, and he made an offer earlier this month, I think it was, last month, January. To Makate. Neither side disclosed the amount because of confidentiality clauses. But Chris Schoeman, who emerged this week, did a radio interview with 702. He was one of the litigation funders for Makate, and he claimed that Vodacom paid or offered Makate 49 million rand, which I've heard is ballpark the correct figure. But Makate rejected it. I don't know, 49 million rand sounds like a heck of a lot of money to me.
Sounds like a lot of money. Unless your lawyer's bill is 55 million.
Exactly.
Then it might be a problem.
Exactly. And perhaps you've offered money to people. Perhaps you've made promises to certain people. Perhaps you've gone into debt on the expectation of a big payout. And I don't know if any of these things are true. It's just conjecture on my part. But there's no doubt that he owes a lot of money to his lawyers, including Chris Schoeman. So I think Mr. Makate has got himself in a bit of a predicament because I can't see this going anywhere because the Constitutional Court has ruled on it. Does he go back to the Constitutional Court? Are they going to listen to him? I don't know. Does he go back to the High Court and start this whole process again? Does he really have the money to do that? I think he's backed into a corner, rightly or wrongly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm surprised the whole patent issue hasn't really been explored more. That would seem to make an open and shut case.
I'm not 100% sure about that. I think the facts around that would have to be brought out in court. But certainly, at face value and looking at the documents and looking at the paper trail, it certainly appears that MTN has a claim to make that they were the people who came up with the idea first because they were the first to patent it.
But then the other confusing trail of events was who at Vodacom claimed that they invented it after this dispute started?
Ellen, not Craig.
Yes. And then later on, Vodacom came out to say that no, actually, recently Vodacom came out to say that no, MTN actually invented it.
Yes. What a mess. What a mess.
So yeah, opera indeed.
Alan Knott Craig didn't exactly cover himself in glory in this whole thing. He also testified in court. I forget which court it was, but I must look back. I've got a copy of his book, Second is Nothing, or whatever it was called, or First is Everything. I think it's called Second is Nothing, where I can't remember the exact phrasing, but he did claim that he came up with the idea. He was standing on the balcony and watching a security guard trying to get hold of another security guard or something, and then he said the idea came to me, which subsequently transpired as was complete nonsense. And he basically fabricated that in his book.
We should also not, I guess, I mean, this is now talking kind of more broadly about stuff like this, but, you know, it's plausible that a few people can come up with the same idea around the same time as this technology became prevalent in South Africa.
Yes.
A lot of people could have been looking at somebody or had the need. I mean, I remember when one of my parents had a cell phone through work, and we used to take it when we went out somewhere just for the safety of it or whatever.
Yeah.
And we would give them a missed call because charges were quite high back then. So we would give them a missed call on the landline or whatever, and they would know to come and pick us up. I mean, you know, so the idea of doing that type of thing, I think, was floating around. It must have been. A few engineers in a few places. It comes down to who's doing the actual paperwork for it first, I guess.
Yeah. I'd love to see the MTN patent stuff challenged in court, because it's easy to just kind of say, well, the MTN patented this first, therefore it's theirs, it's their invention. But I think we'd have to look at the timelines. When did MTN come up with this service? When did it launch it? When did it file for the patent? When did Vodacom launch? And interrogate all that, and you'd need a judge to look at it and make a finding. Because there's a lot of complexity there, but it's fascinating that it does appear to me, at face value anyway, that Makate and Ari Khan from MTN came up with this idea independently of each other around the same time.
I also, there was some talk that the two ideas weren't the same.
Yeah.
So Makate's idea was slightly different or completely different to what it's actually a Please Call Me Today or what that service actually is today.
I haven't looked at that.
Which further confused me.
Yeah, that has confused me as well. I haven't looked at that in detail, but I think they used different bearers or something, different technologies. I think there was SMS and one was USD, SSD or some other technology. I think they did the same basic thing at the end of the day, which was to connect people who don't have airtime.
So maybe the claim is around the broader idea of getting somebody to phone you when you don't have airtime. So it's kind of like a knock-knock that you send to somebody.
Yeah. And I asked MTN this week why they didn't enforce their patent. Now, they actually sent a letter or several letters to Vodacom back in the early 2000s when Vodacom launched Please Call Me, saying, sorry, guys, this is our patent and you may not use it. Vodacom, I believe, pushed back quite hard and there was some threat of legal action happening, and then MTN didn't pursue it. Now, they said this week, and I'm paraphrasing here, they said that the industry was very young in those days. It was growing very rapidly, and they were focusing on getting as many customers on board as possible. They also kind of hinted that they didn't want to really be seen to be litigating in a space where a service has been launched that actually helps poor customers, because this was really to help people who don't have airtime, who can't afford airtime. So they said that on that basis, they decided not to pursue legal action against Vodacom, even though they initially wrote some letters to Vodacom saying, please stop. There was a lot of pushback behind the scenes. I'm getting the impression that there was a lot of tension behind the scenes, the details of which I don't think have come out yet. But MTN later let that patent lapse. They didn't renew it. It fell away. I believe that was a deliberate decision.
Yeah, this thing dragged on far too long. Yeah. It's like that TV. It's like Lost, the TV series. It's five seasons too long. Yeah. Seven seasons too long.
The first two seasons of Lost were fantastic, and then Lost the plot. Yeah, literally.
And I think
lost
this
the
case, I think this is it's what shows you when. I would probably wager a bet to say that this is what happens when the legal stuff takes over from the core of what the issue, and it just spirals out of control from there.
Yeah, it also shows how slow our court system is, that it drags on this long.
And how expensive it is. I mean, if it's more than 50 million, which I've heard a few rumors that it is.
Yeah, to go through every single court all the way to the Concord, that costs a lot of money.
I don't know.
So 49 million rand, will that cover legal bills? Probably not.
Probably not. How long has this thing been going on? Decade?
18 years.
2 decades, yeah. I don't think that would cover the legal costs.
So there was an interesting call that Vodacom executives had on Friday. Mr. Teketo Nyoka, I think everyone knows him as Snakes. Nyoka, his surname means snake, I think, in Zulu. I specifically asked him, I said to him, might you offer more to Nkate to make this problem go away and kind of ease tensions? And he said they're actually legally bound by the offer that they've made now, because this is a court-sanctioned process. They went through a deadlock-breaking process, and the determination made by the Vodacom CEO is therefore final and legally binding. So even if they wanted to offer him more money, they may not do so, because it's a legally binding decision. And therefore, the only place that can overturn the amount that Vodacom has offered to Makate is the court system. So either the High Court or the Constitutional Court. So it has to go back to court if Makate wants more money. But now, is he underwater? That's the question. Is he? How desperate is Makate? Does he need more money? Is he bankrupt on this 40, assuming the 49 million rand is correct? Does he owe his lawyers and other people more money than Vodacom is offering him? And where does that leave him? I mean, he must be in a pretty desperate place if that's the case. And who's going to bankroll his further litigation?
Yeah, and we know the corporations can always outplay that in that game when it comes to, you know, sustaining lawyers' bills.
Yes.
They've just got deeper pockets.
Yeah. There is, I mean, the other interesting angle, of course, is the political angle, which I think throws a spanner in the works for Vodacom. We've seen Panyaza Lesufi, the Gauteng Basic Education MEC, going on a bit of a, a campaign against Vodacom. He's been using his official Twitter account to severely criticize Vodacom. And, of course, we saw the communications minister just a couple of weeks ago responding to Lesufi on Twitter and saying, just shut up, Vodacom. We don't want to talk to you until you've paid Makate. She subsequently deleted that tweet. I think she realized she probably shouldn't be tweeting stuff like that about a company which she is responsible for setting policy for. but it's election season, of course. We've got an election coming up in, 3-4 months. And this is a hot-button topic, and so the politicians are jumping on the bandwagon. One wonders, I've heard speculation, and I must stress I have no idea whether any of this speculation is correct. It's just pure rumors in the market. Could be completely wrong, but there are rumors that Makate may have offered the ANC money from the outcome of this thing. Again, I must stress, I don't know if there's any truth to that. If there is truth to it, it's an utter scandal. But those rumors are out there.
Also, the thing is, this is a typical small guy versus the big corporation kind of story.
And so people like to, let's support the small guy.
Yeah, people like to, and for I guess for nefarious reasons, this thing could be easily be attached to whoever's agenda, you know?
Yeah.
That's the problem with something that's dragging on so long.
Mm. But as with all complex stories, there's two sides to the story, and there's multiple sides to the story. But it would be wrong to simply trust everything that the Makate camp says, and to simply trust everything the Vodacom camp says. But it's an ugly situation, and I think Makate is backed into a corner.
Yeah, well, it's now down to the last few bills that needs to be paid. Who's going to be able to do it first and keep this thing going?
Yeah, and what happens if it goes back to court? Will the court entertain this again? The court might decide that this is spurious litigation now.
Oof, yeah, I wouldn't want to be in anybody's position. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I kind of feel sorry for Makate in some ways. But also feel sorry for Vodacom's PR people who are having to deal with this situation. I think they must have had a nightmare week.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, there's just, if you look at just the broader spectrum in many facets of South African life, there's just so much that's distracting us from the real business of just getting down and building this country and just getting down to doing a job, better customer service. We always get sidetracked.
Yeah.
And that's what's delaying all these beautiful things that we could potentially have.
That's what worries me about some of the politics we're seeing in this country now. There seems to be, particularly in the ruling party, there seems to be a growing anti-business sentiment. And that's very dangerous.
Mm.
You don't want to chase investors away. And the more you beat on that populist drum, the more more senior political leaders, you know, hit on and bash big business or business in general, the more capital is likely to flee. You don't want to, especially in an economy as weak as ours and that has been in a very weak position for a long time, you can't afford to chase away capital. You need investment. You need the investors on the ground. You need people feeling confident about the future of the country. And you don't do that by bashing business.
Well, I mean, didn't Sunday Times, I didn't read the whole thing. I just read some of the headlines. But Germany, UK, and USA apparently sent a letter to Ramaphosa.
Yes. There were 5 countries, I think. Switzerland, Germany, France, US, and UK. Yeah, they did. And, the Sunday Times hyped up the corruption angle, though. There were also concerns expressed about other things, including BE, I believe, and what was the other one? There was another big issue of concern for them. But yeah, interesting. It's almost unprecedented for large countries like this to write a letter to the president. I don't know where the letter came from because it was meant to be confidential. I suppose these things always leak.
Yeah, this isn't a very watertight ship, let's be honest.
Which is good.
But, you know, throughout, we are talking about the South African state of things, but globally too, I mean, the biggest problem we have is politicians and the people with the power.
Yes.
Clearly nobody can keep their hands to themselves, and clearly nobody can look out for the people first and foremost. I'm not saying, obviously there's a lot of good people in governments, but clearly not enough, because this stuff is rampant, and then we
politics
have,
is a mess worldwide.
Then we have Russia pulling out of this nuclear 1983 nuclear deal.
Well, it was not Russia; it's the US pulling out of that deal.
Russia is basically saying they're not going to be a part of it now, right? So they can build whatever they want to build. Nobody can put sanctions up against them because they are experimenting with nukes.
It's a dangerous time. China US trade wars, which have the potential to get very ugly indeed. Donald Trump wanting to build a wall on the southern border. Brexit, of course. The world is a mess right now.
As long as we've got the internet, some good games, and a bit of fiber. But the problem is, once those nukes go off, nothing's going to work. Then we're going to have to put our survival skills that we've learned from playing these games to actual use. Man, we're in for an exciting time.
What is that? What is that nuclear?
Sorry, what was that? Nuke.
Yeah, what was that nuke Fallout game? Fallout, it was called Fallout, yeah.
Post-world apocalyptic real-time strategy game.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
It's exciting times if you have to break it down to the very basic version of what's happening.
Mm. Yeah, we haven't had a world war for a very long time. One hopes that we're not going to ever have another one, but... Yeah, I mean, when did World War II end? 1945.
Mm.
World War I and World War II were in quick succession, and the world's been relatively peaceful since then. A couple of wars like Vietnam and turbulence around the world here in Southern Africa and hotspots and stuff, but nothing of a global sort of nature. I think we are getting off topic here, but with globalization and technology
related.
And the internet and all that sort of thing, and the world has become a global community, and one hopes that that means that global conflagrations are a thing of the past. But you can never say never, especially with the current political crowd in some of these major countries.
It's very much a digital era. So the war is partly and already, I would argue, being fought, you know, on the internet in a digital space. I mean, a lot of these rumors coming out about the US election, whether they're right or wrong, the fact that it's possible, the fact that it was possible, I don't know, it's scary times. I mean, this is, we have to be cautious, I think.
Yeah, governments are certainly playing a more and more active role in cyber, what's the word? I wouldn't say cyber crime, cyber intrusions and I mean, we saw things like Stuxnet, for example, which partially disable the Iranian nuclear program. And you can be sure that China and US and these big countries are investing one hell of a lot of money in information security experts and hackers and all this sort of thing, and their probing systems. And you can be sure all this stuff is going on. We just don't hear about it, but you can be sure that the Chinese and the Americans are all probing each other's systems all the time to try and get information.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, we know how easy it is to, I mean, if you want to target hack somebody, it is difficult, but it's not impossible. If you've got the right tools and the right people in place, I mean, you can get at people via the weakest link around them. So if it's a corporation, get in through, you know, somebody with the right access at the lowest pay grade. You know, they usually, you know, probably you can probably get away with a lot more with targeting somebody like that. Nothing is safe. It's scary in that regard. But what is the end game? What is the end game for these companies, these corporations, and these governments? World domination? I mean, do these people really want to be Dr. Evil sitting on a chair taking over the world? Or is it just, no, we just want to look after ourselves? Or is it, I want more money? I mean, what is that end game?
Yeah, I'm not an expert on global geopolitics, but it's a worrying time. On that depressing note, let's take a word from our commercial sponsors. We'll be back in just a moment.
BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Are you a search engine? Because you found me.
I feel we have a strong connection.
Well, you're pretty fly for a Wi-Fi. Should we drop it like a hotspot and head back to yours so we can show Max and snuggle? Let's get giga with it.
But I don't have fiber. Don't get caught in 50 shades of delay. Broadband your horizons and switch to Vox's super fast, super reliable fiber network. Experience the momentum. Connect your world. Visit us at vox.co.za/fiber.
Well, welcome back to the podcast. How's it, Rehat?
How's it, Duncan? I'm very happy at the moment. How are you?
The ads made you happy, didn't they?
Yeah, very much. Thanks, sponsors.
So, interesting story about Apple this week. They flexed their muscles with Facebook and Google. I'm not quite sure exactly what they did, but there was some sort of permission or access that had been granted for internal development or testing of applications on campus. And Apple accused them of distributing these apps beyond their own internal uses for research purposes in the case of Facebook. I'm not sure what the case was of Google. But this had the impact of severely affecting day-to-day operations at Facebook particularly. I think less so at Google because they mostly run Android handsets. But many Apple iPhone users at Facebook, and they couldn't do things like catch shuttle services or see what was available in the cafeteria for lunch, or work on apps that they were building on, and all this sort of thing. I kind of looked at this and I thought, well, this is interesting. You know, even if they violated Apple's terms and conditions, which apparently they did, it does make you wonder whether Apple was simply flexing its muscles to say. And we know that they've been having a go at Facebook in particular lately. In fact, Tim Cook and Mark Zuckerberg have been having a go at each other for a while now in media interviews. Apple particularly strongly, Tim Cook, you know, attacking the very business model of Facebook, saying that it's you know, invades your privacy. You are the product. At Apple, we care about your privacy, which I don't really buy. But it's an interesting situation. Apple has showed these companies, particularly Facebook, where the power lies. Tim Cook's message here was, do as we say, we have the power to shut you down.
Yeah, this is our platform. You will abide by our rules.
Yeah.
I think, again, this goes back to all the stories we've been talking about. Everything is so sensitive, and I think, you know, people are fighting so hard for their little – bit of the pie, you know, although Apple's got most of that pie at the moment. But it's not a good thing. Whether it's a squabble between execs or the business at large, or whether it's they just had enough and it does compromise, you know, the Apple platform with them doing this kind of stuff. Maybe, you know, we know Facebook has not been the best of good intentions.
No.
With everything that's come out. I mean, I don't know if we're going to talk about the Facebook FaceTime app bug. That just goes to show that, you know, everything has been scrutinized so closely. And while that bug was certainly an Apple issue, you know, if anything comes out that is not directly resulting of their negligence, but one of the companies that they've given special access to for certain, you know, for certain things, I would also feel a bit uneasy about that. And then it becomes a power game after that, for sure.
It's a power game, and I think it's also a marketing game. I think Apple is playing a marketing game here. I mean, we've seen those adverts. We saw that billboard that they put up outside CES in early January. Mm. I think it said what is this? What lives on your iPhone stays on your iPhone, or something like that.
Yeah.
Which was a clear
and they put it up in Vegas.
In Vegas, right opposite the CES main halls. Which was very clearly a marketing statement, saying, you know, we care about your privacy. Privacy is a focus. And taking a dig at companies like Google and Facebook, saying that, you know, perhaps that isn't their focus. Their focus is selling advertising to you based on the information you supply to them, which is their business model. But some people are very critical of that business model, but it's also delivered free software to billions of people. The question is Apple doing this out of genuine concern about its end users, or is it doing this because it's a convenient marketing platform to sell more iPhones? And I'm leaning towards the latter.
Probably. I would also add on to that, maybe a point B, that should anything go wrong, because we know, I mean, if Facebook was a crisp, clean company and none of these issues has arisen, I don't think this would have ever have been an issue. They would have just run with this. But as a result of all the things that's happening, the bad PR that could result if something goes horribly wrong, let's say 6 months down the line, the story comes out that this stuff went down because of this and Apple knew about it and they didn't do anything about it. I think that could partly be the reason.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want that on my resume.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's an interesting one. We'll see where this goes, because I have a strong suspicion that Apple's marketing efforts in this regard are far from done. Facebook really messed up last year. Especially with the Cambridge Analytica thing. But I don't necessarily trust Apple's marketing. I think this is more marketing than it is genuine concern for their customers. Maybe it's both.
Where's the money going?
Let's be generous. You know, this helps their customers, sure, because they're being tough on privacy. They're being tough on their terms and conditions. And if someone's violating them, they're being tough on that company, even if it's a major company like Facebook. But by the same token, they're also getting great marketing mileage out of it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, all these people talking about it. Be the hashtag, right?
Yeah. So Spotify is reportedly buying a podcasting company. We're on Spotify. We're one of the first podcasts on there, actually.
Yeah.
Must say, we don't see a huge amount of traffic from it. They've been very sort of softly in their approach to launching it. They seem to be doing it right, though. I've had to communicate with them a couple of times now, and they've always been very helpful and quick. And so they've got teams behind their podcasting platform. But it almost feels like that it's lacking something, and that they need to really push it forward. So now they're in negotiations to buy a podcasting company. What podcasting company is it, Rahat? You've had a look at the story.
Okay, so it's called Gimlet Media. I mean, apart from knowing it's a pretty slick podcasting network that's obviously predominantly in the US. It's in the US from what I can see. Let me just double check. Based in New York. So it makes a lot of sense if, I mean, clearly we know podcasting is on the up. we see a massive uptake on it, and Spotify obviously knows this. I'm not sure why I don't really ever get pushed podcast stories. I mean, that's quite interesting. So obviously they are working on enhancing this experience. But the interesting thing is, and this is why they are, it's not just so Gimlet isn't just a podcasting network. They're also doing some video production based things. Now, this is fitting in very nicely with Spotify. Last year launched something called Spotlight, which is going to enable them, or enables them, to do podcasts with visual elements, so photographs and video clips, etc., etc. So clearly the thinking there is to enhance your, because at the moment, if you think about it, if you listen to music, some of the most popular music titles comes up with additional information on screen, which is actually very interesting. You know, either information about the lyrics or about the artist, etc., etc.
Or so visuals, which I've seen as well.
Visuals, yeah, yeah. So combine this with a podcast like this, for example, where we can throw up links, video clips, what we're talking about. I can see a lot of benefit in that. And if you've got one of the biggest streaming platforms, you know, this is definitely the way to do it. And podcasting, like I said, is without a doubt, it's on the app.
I'd like to see them. What I'd like to see Spotify do is to surface podcasts more than they do at the moment. I mean, they're fantastic at helping you surface new music. They've got the Made For You section where they have the new release, Your Release Radar, I think it's called, which shows you new albums that have come out that will be of interest to you. That's very, very cool for discovering new music. It also offers you the latest tracks, or just tracks. I think, what is it called? Discover Weekly, that surfaces music you might be interested in. I've discovered so much more music that way. Now, if they could use those same sort of algorithms that they use there to surface new podcasts, now that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's also, I mean, I'm just looking open Spotify, just looking at the podcast section, and I mean, it is a nice layout, and it is as good as the music section, but I think it can be improved in the way you discover stuff, because nothing here jumps out at me really as something that I should be consuming.
Yeah.
And I don't see any South African stuff popping up at first. So whether there is any other local content on there, I guess that's also debatable, but that's why this this very expensive acquisition could be a very good play for them if they can combine these elements. Look at what Netflix is doing with their own productions, right? They're now Netflix Originals. Now you're in a position where Spotify can say, okay, we've got the platform, we can produce content. We're going to obviously invite people to produce their own. What slide content, video, podcasts, but we'll also produce and support a strong set and really build this, because we are the audio guys. Netflix is the video guys. You know, we want to own this domain.
Yeah,
I don't even know what is Apple doing in this space. I don't think. I mean, apart from
Apple Music,
you know, the podcast section and the way you discover it, I don't think they're doing anything visual.
No. Yeah, I don't use iTunes anymore, so I don't know.
We love you, Spotify. It's such a great platform. But I think this is going to be great. And I'm very excited to see how this visual side of it works with Spotlight.
Yeah.
Because, I do love watching a lot of the podcasts, because a lot of the podcasts that I watch actually have video version where the guys actually record video and then they put that audio track onto a podcast.
Can you imagine what would have happened to me if I was watching the video version of the Joe Rogan podcast while I was trying?
On your smartphone or on your smartwatch? My word. No, that's why you need Google Glass, actually. That could have worked.
I'd probably be dead right now. I'd fallen off a cliff somewhere. So our last news item this week, just briefly, Rehad, you've had a look at this. I haven't looked at this at all. Hacker groups may have stolen $1 billion in cryptocurrency. These headlines seem to appear once every couple of months.
Well, this kind of just sheds new light on these things. Blockchain analytics from a company called Chain Analysis indicate that there's basically two groups that have been identified, and they've been tracking transactions, because obviously you can't identify specific people, but you can track where these hashes are going to. They've identified, and they've called them Alpha and Beta, two groups that have said to have stolen or hacked 60% of all the cryptocurrency hacks to date.
Oh, wow.
So they were responsible for about $1 billion worth of cryptocurrency and most of the hacks.
So this is over a long period of time?
Over a long period of time. And yeah. I mean, so they've obviously been dominating, very clear intention behind what they were trying to do. Calls into question a little bit about, you know, the security, I guess, or the future potential security of the blockchain, in that there's no real accountability at the back end. I mean, once the stuff gets hacked, because you can't track where it goes, I mean, it's a deep pit, right? So it's used for a lot of great things. I'm not discrediting blockchain at all. I think it's fantastic. But these kind of things need to be addressed, I guess. Hacking in general, but two groups responsible for most of that is a bit worrying. Because they've been getting away for it for a very long time.
Yeah, I'm still invested in Bitcoin, I must say, but I've stopped looking at the price. It's too depressing. I actually think I looked at Bitcoin price 2 weeks ago. I can't do it anymore. I'm just leaving my money.
It's certainly lost a bit of, again, lost a bit of the shine. Nobody's talking about it as enthusiastically anymore. But just one interesting little thing to note from the story is these guys, when they got access to the wallets, transferring the money to cover their tracks, they transferred an average of 5,000 times before eventually cashing it out.
Jeez.
Each hack, each transaction. So this isn't a minor operation where I'm getting access to your wallet, transferring it out, boom, I'm done, I've got your money.
Yeah.
It was a little bit more complex than that. And these guys, you know, I guess if there's rules, but if these systems are based on rules, those rules can be broken. You know, if I can quote the very famous Matrix BV quote, we need to look at these things. It's a bit scary.
Yeah. On that note, that's our news this week. We don't have a winner and loser this week, mainly because I fell on my face and didn't have time to come up with.
Your face is the loser.
my body's the loser today.
And Joe Rogan podcast is the winner.
Damn you, Joe Rogan. I also don't have a pick this week, so no pressure, Rechard. It's all on you.
Ooh, well, I've got a pretty good one, a pretty good pick. So 2 weeks ago, NVIDIA announced with a driver update that they're going to do this. They're going to enable FreeSync, which I don't know. You know G-Sync and FreeSync. It's essentially adaptive rate refresh technology for gamers, which just gives a much better experience. Which means your screen and your graphics card basically keep in sync with each other, and it just creates a much smoother experience. Now, G-Sync monitors are very expensive. FreeSync monitors, which is an open source standard and only up to now was supported by AMD technology, is now also supported by NVIDIA. And some screen models with FreeSync support is now, you know, obviously you can use them on NVIDIA graphics card, which is great news. So I've been using and playing with an Alienware monitor. I'm just, actually didn't get the model number, but they've only got two. They've got a G-Sync model and they've got this FreeSync model, and I was very impressed with the gaming performance of this thing with the FreeSync enabled. It doesn't work well on all monitors, and you need to do a little bit of tweaking on it. There's some good tutorials online.
On all graphics cards, you mean?
Well, on all NVIDIA graphics cards, yeah. Getting it working on NVIDIA's going to approve certain models. Like, this is an officially stamped approved NVIDIA FreeSync supported monitor. For all the others, some of them would work. If you enable it, you might get some tearing on screen or some black frames being thrown in because it can't really handle it. So, but you can tweak it. So as long as you've got a FreeSync monitor, you should be able to get some benefit from this. But obviously, some monitors just flat out wouldn't work.
So what is it? I mean, I haven't seen one of these. So what does it look like when you're actually playing a game? What's different?
Well, it's a lot smoother. So with gaming, higher frame rate is obviously better because it refreshes the screen a lot faster, so the picture appears a lot smoother. Obviously, there is a lot of preference involved here too. If it's too high a frame rate, it doesn't look nice on everybody's eye. But you know, for most, you want over 100 FPS, and you'll have a relatively good experience. With this technology, it's your graphics cards can push out a lot more frames, but in certain scenes within a game, you don't necessarily need 200 frames all the time. But your monitor might still be pushing out those amount of frames. So now your card is using performance, so there's performance impacts and that kind of thing. So this is just basically syncing up the refresh rate on your monitor with what your graphics card is pushing out in layman's terms.
Okay, I don't really understand it. But has this got to do with, I know we've seen these gaming monitors coming out at 144Hz refresh versus the traditional 60Hz that you have on a desktop monitor. Is this a different technology to that?
Yeah, so this basically is a step up from that. Really just taking the technology in a new direction and saying, okay, I'm going to talk to the monitor and I'm going to make sure that your performance is always going to be optimal.
Okay.
It's not always going to be 144 frames a second, but your performance is going to be optimal based on what you're seeing on screen. And it's just creating a smoother game experience.
Okay.
It's well worth checking it out. I'm not sure about your massive monitor you've got there, Duncan. Let's check if it's. I don't think it's FreeSync.
I doubt it.
It's a very specific specification on
right.
a monitor.
Right.
But this is the Alienware 25-inch. It's got a weird number, AW2518HF. Like I said, they've got two versions. This is one is going for about 6.5, and then the G-Sync version is quite a bit more expensive. I think that's just under 10 grand. For a 25-inch monitor.
That's expensive, yeah. Sure.
But this Alienware is absolutely beautiful. It's got a very nice, slick, modern-looking base and height-adjustable monitor. So when I'm sitting like I'm doing now, I've got my notebook open in front of me. I raise the the monitor up, so mm-hmm. it's a bit higher. And when I'm closing as I'm playing games, I can just drop it down a bit. It's a really beautiful monitor. So that's my pick for this week, the Alien 25-inch, 240Hz gaming monitor.
240Hz?
Yeah, that's a lot of
hertzes. I think I'm going to have to pop around and have a look at this thing, Richard. You've intrigued me with
this. Yeah, unfortunately, it's going back this week, so you may. But you should get them to send it to you for a review. It's definitely worth checking out.
Cool. Maybe I'll do that. And I think that's our show, given that we don't have a winner and a loser and I don't have a pick. I'll be back with one next week. but before we do our song pick this week, let's do this week's quiz. The first question was, how much did Vodacom offer Nkosana Makate according to his former litigation funder? And that was 49 million rand.
Second question, MTN this week chopped out of bundle ad hoc data prices to what per megabyte? And the answer is 29 cents.
That's pretty good, actually. Which state-owned company failed to pay its employees on time this week, blaming a bank glitch for the problem? And that's the SABC.
Mm, yeah, that's a sad situation for all those employees. Fourth question, allegations of misconduct at Eskom, which emerged this week and which were later refuted, caused the shares of which JSE-listed technology company to tumble? And the answer is EOH.
And the last question in this week's quiz, Apple this week said it could cut the price of iPhones in some markets outside the US. Why did it say it was doing this? And the answer, strength of the US dollar relative to some of these currencies. It's a nice thing to blame. Perhaps they should be blaming the fact that their phones are too expensive, but we'll leave that.
Yeah, it's a nice way to say that our stuff is just too expensive. We need to drop the price because nobody can afford it.
Especially in emerging markets. and that's our show. As always, you can WhatsApp the show 071-999-1111. And we're playing out with a song pick from Recha today, which I've lined up here. Big fan of this band, actually, Wings, Paul McCartney and Wings. Mm. This is off a Band on the Run album.
I think so.
Everyone knows that song. I'm not sure I know this one. I'll have to play it before I know.
a great song.
What made you pick it this week?
I don't know. It's just always been on my playlist, and I love it.
I started playing.
I don't listen to many Paul McCartney. I'm obviously a Beatles fan, but I don't listen to many Paul McCartney Wings albums. I can't remember why I heard this, but I love to Shazam tracks whenever I hear it.
Yeah.
When I'm out and about, stuff to remind me or stuff that I hear for the first time. And this was one of those things that just popped up. Never heard the song. Went like, whoa, this is interesting. Who sings it? And I thoroughly enjoy it. And I'm sure it's a great song for a Sunday afternoon.
Fantastic. So this is Jet by Paul McCartney and Wings. Until next time, from Recha and myself, cheers.
Cheers.